Once again, the South Carolina Department of Education welcomes you to Speaking of Schools. And my name is Doug Keel. Glad to have you aboard, as today we're going to be revisiting the James Otis Lecture from September, where the program topic was women's rights. And since March is Women's History Month, we thought it only appropriate that we bring you the comments from our guest today on Speaking of Schools, or should I say the guest of the American Board of Trial Advocates who sponsored the James Otis Lecture back around Constitution Day. So today we'll hear the introduction of Molly Craig by John Lay, who's president of the South Carolina chapter of the American Board of Trial Advocates. Mrs. Craig is a partner in the Hood Law Firm in Charleston. Then the Honorable Aphrodite Condoras, a judge on the South Carolina Court of Appeals, will introduce Chief Justice Jean Toll, and the Chief Justice will make comments on women's rights. So, Women's History Month, women's rights. That's our topic today as we're speaking of schools.
Our next speaker is Molly Craig of the Hood Law Firm in Charleston, South Carolina, and she's going to be speaking to us about women making history. Molly is in a firm of 25 lawyers that focuses exclusively on litigation. She is past president of the International Association of Defense Counsel, one of the top defense organizations in the world. She's past president of the South Carolina Defense Trial Attorneys Association. She's former member of the Board of Directors for the Defense Research Institute, the Lawyers for, and Lawyers for Civil Justice. She's a member of the American Board of Trial Advocates, the International Academy of Trial Lawyers, the Federation of Defense and Corporate Counsel, Association of Defense Trial Attorneys, and Attorneys Committee for the National Center of State Court. She is a leader among lawyers. Ms. Craig has been recognized for inclusion in the Chambers USA, listed in Best Lawyers in America, and selected as one of South Carolina's top 25 super lawyers. Recently, Ms. Craig was recognized as South Carolina Best Lawyers as Product Liability Defense Lawyer of the Year. She's benchmark's top 250 women in litigation in the entire country. She, in 2015, she won Leaders in the Law for South Carolina. In 2011, Molly was the recipient of the Gold Complete Lawyer Award given by the University of South Carolina School of Law Alumni Association. We're lucky to have her today. She's not just one of the top trial lawyers in South Carolina. She is one of the top trial lawyers in the United States. And she is here practicing law in South Carolina. It's a great achievement. One thing of note, before we asked Molly to speak, all of you folks were already designated as James Otis Scholars. Molly's daughter, Macy Craig, is here with us today, and she was designated as a James Otis Scholar, and then we asked her mom to be part of the program. So it's a neat little combination there. Molly, I would ask you to come forward.
Thank you very much, John T. It's wonderful to be here with all of you today to celebrate Constitution Day. And as John T. just said, it's extra special for me because my daughter Macy, who is a junior at Ashley Hall and strategically sitting in the back of the room, is here with us as well. So it's great to be here in Columbia. Thank you all for joining us. But for now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Constitution, and let's talk about women making history. The United States Constitution, signed on September 17th in 1787, established this country's national government. 39 brave men signed the document and changed the course of history. Today, I want to talk about three brave women who, like those who first signed the Constitution, have changed the course of history through their courage and perseverance. In this country, people are judged on their merits, and there are no limits on what can be achieved. These three women I will discuss rose to greatness and expanded women's rights in our country. I want each of you to know that with courage and perseverance, you can also achieve great things. These three women I will speak about today have shown bravery and dedication in the face of adversity, and they have shaped paths that we are lucky to follow. They are role models for each and every one of us. So I will talk about first, the first African-American female lawyer in this country, who was the first woman to be granted permission to argue cases in front of the United States Supreme Court. Her name is Charlotte E. Ray. The second person I will talk about is the first woman appointed to the United States Supreme Court, who is Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And the third person is the first woman to serve as a justice on the South Carolina Supreme Court and later to serve as the first woman Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court, our very own Chief Justice Toll, who is here with us today. So let's start with Charlotte Ray. On a cold January morning in New York City, Charlotte Ray was born to Reverend Charles Bennett Ray and Charlotte August Burroughs. She was one of six children. Her father made sure that each of his three girls went to college, which was a difficult feat at that time in our country's history. Charlotte earned her law degree at Howard University School of Law in 1872, Phi Beta Kappa. Some people claim that she used the name C period E period, her initials, C.E. Ray, to disguise her gender upon applying to law school so that her application would not be instantly revoked. Charlotte was admitted to the District of Columbia Bar in 1872, making her the first female African-American lawyer in the United States. And she was the first woman to be granted permission to argue cases in front of the United States Supreme Court. These achievements were used as precedent by women all around the country who wanted to seek admission to the bar. Charlotte practiced law for only a few years because of the widespread prejudices of the times. It was difficult for her, as an African-American and a woman, to attract enough clients to keep her practice going. Charlotte then became a teacher and was active in the women's suffrage movement. More than 100 years after Charlotte Ray became the first woman to be granted permission to argue cases in front of the United States Supreme Court, in 1981, the first woman was appointed to the highest court. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor was born March 26, 1930, along with the Great Depression. Her mother, Ada May Day, left her home on an Arizona cattle ranch with her husband of 3 years, Harry Day, to travel to her mother's in El Paso, Texas, to be near a city hospital to deliver Justice O'Connor. At the age of six, Justice O'Connor was sent away to a rigorous traditional school in El Paso to live with her maternal grandmother, and she missed her home and her family very much. Justice O'Connor entered Stanford University for college when she was 16 years old, much younger than most others. As you might expect, Justice O'Connor excelled. She impressed her classmates, and she was 19 years old when she finished her undergraduate work and entered law school. Justice O'Connor was one of five women in her law school class. Her classmate and friend, William Rehnquist, who would later serve as Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, was impressed by her practice of asking any question without fear of ridicule. Justice O'Connor graduated from law school in the top 10% of her class and was on the board of editors of the prestigious Stanford Law Review. When she graduated in 1952, Justice O'Connor interviewed with several law firms in California, but she received no offers of employment except one. It was for a position as a legal secretary. Justice O'Connor declined the job as legal secretary, and through her courage and perseverance, she eventually found work as a deputy county attorney handling civil cases. After the birth of her first child and after a move to Phoenix, Arizona, Justice O'Connor sought work as an attorney, only to find that law firms were still not hiring women lawyers. However, this did not stop Justice O'Connor. She set up a law firm with a colleague she met while studying for the bar exam, and they took every bit of work they could get their hands on. Justice O'Connor's persistence and her ambition to work as an attorney led to her appointment in 1981 as the first woman on the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Now I'm going to speak about another remarkable and highly accomplished woman, a woman who has made history not only in our state, but in our country. On March 17, 1988, Chief Justice Toll became the first woman to serve as a justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court. She was installed as Chief Justice on March 23, 2000, and was re-elected Chief Justice in February 2004, and again in February 2014. When Chief Justice Toll was admitted to the South Carolina Bar in 1968, there were only 10 women in the active practice of law in South Carolina. In 1968, Justice Toll could try a case before a jury, but she could not sit on a jury in South Carolina. And it wasn't until 1969 that the South Carolina General Assembly passed legislation permitting women to serve on juries in South Carolina. Justice Toll successfully prosecuted an action in federal court on behalf of a female law student. This female law student was appointed as a Senate page by her senator, but the clerk of the Senate would not allow her to be seated as a page because she was a woman. She wanted Justice Toll to represent her, and Justice Toll did represent this female law student successfully. Justice Toll practiced law for 20 years prior to her election to the Supreme Court, and she managed to balance plaintiff and defense work along with criminal trial work, complex constitutional litigation, and administrative law. She also used her law degree for public service. For 13 years, she served in the South Carolina House of Representatives, representing Richland County, and was the first woman in South Carolina to chair a standing committee. Since that time, Justice Toll has greatly influenced South Carolina jurisprudence during her 27 years on the bench by writing opinions covering the gamut of issues. Now, I'd like to share with you a personal story that I have about Chief Justice Toll and one of the many, many reasons that I have such great admiration for her. Many of you may have heard of iCivics, which was founded by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Many of you have probably played the iCivics games in your schools. iCivics is dedicated to reinvigorating civic learning through interactive and engaging learning sources like computer games, games that students like to play. Justice O'Connor realized that there was a real need for education in our schools about our system of government. And iCivics teaches middle school and high school students about civics education in a fun and effective way, as I said, by playing video games. It is designed to prepare the next generation of students to become knowledgeable and active citizens. Justice O'Connor came to Charleston back in 2008. She was receiving an award from the South Carolina and the North Carolina Women's Law Associations. At that time, Justice O'Connor had already launched what was then called Our Courts, and later the name changed to become iCivics. A dear friend of mine from Charleston, Catherine Templeton, you may know her, she's the former director of DHEC. Ms. Templeton and I helped to arrange an event at Charleston Day School where children from neighboring schools could come hear Justice O'Connor speak about civics education. After her talk, Justice O'Connor joined a group of children who played the iCivics games on laptops in the school library. Chief Justice Toll also came to Charleston, and she attended the event where Justice O'Connor spoke to the children. Chief Justice Toll also joined Justice O'Connor in the library to play on the computer games with the children. Out of that experience, Chief Justice Toll was moved by the effectiveness of the iCivics games and how much the children enjoyed playing these games. At that point, she was determined to do whatever she could to promote iCivics and ultimately civics education in the schools in South Carolina. Within a couple of weeks, Chief Justice Toll had assembled a task force of educational leaders throughout the state with the sole purpose of figuring out how to get iCivics into our classrooms because she knew and she could appreciate the impact this would make on the students in our state. This task force, along with the assistance of a donation from the District Court of South Carolina, legal organizations like the American Board of Trial Advocates, who is sponsoring this event, the International Association of Defense Counsel, and the South Carolina Bar, made incredible strides in South Carolina, and iCivics took off. In fact, under Chief Justice Toll's leadership, other states throughout the country took notice of the success in our state and started to set up similar programs in their states to promote civics education. Truly, South Carolina became the model state for other states who also wanted to further civics education in their schools. It is such a success story, not only for iCivics, but also for the state of South Carolina. iCivics now has been played by over 10 million students throughout the country. For her incredible leadership, Chief Justice Toll was the very first recipient of the Sandra Day O'Connor Advancement of Civics Education Award, which she received in 2010. Now, I hope that my talk this morning about these three women have illustrated for you the possibilities that exist with hard work, courage, and perseverance. These women were all firsts, and they all achieved so much with their determination and their willpower to rise above what was the normal course of business in their times. This is a day to celebrate our citizenship and to celebrate what is possible in our country. Thank you very much for having me here today, and I wish all of you the best of luck in school and all of your future endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. We appreciate that presentation. Our next speaker is the Honorable Aphrodite Condoris. She's a judge of the South Carolina Court of Appeals, and she will be introducing Chief Justice Toll. Judge Condoris was born in Sumter, South Carolina, and attended the University of South Carolina, where she graduated cum laude with a BA in English and was named the outstanding junior in the English department. She graduated from the University of South Carolina School of Law, where she was the first female student bar president, another first. She currently serves on the Chief Justice Commission on the Profession and the South Carolina Senate Judiciary Sentencing Reform Commission. She was elected to the Family Court in February of 2002, and on February 6, 2008, Judge Condoris was elected to the South Carolina Court of Appeals. She is truly one of the most well-liked jurists in the state of South Carolina, but also, importantly, one of the most well-respected. We're very lucky to have her here today. Judge Condoris.
Good morning, everyone. Do we have Sumter people here? Yes, excellent. Greenville? Good. That covers everywhere I live. Great. Thank you. It is my distinct pleasure today to introduce the Chief Justice of the State of South Carolina, Jean Hafer Toll. You just heard from Mrs. Craig all her wonderful accomplishments and how much she has meant to the state of South Carolina in all her various roles. Introducing her today, I want to tell you a few things that you wouldn't know about her. First of all, she may be the most loyal person I've ever known. If you are her friend, you will always be her friend. There is nothing about politics to it. There is nothing about fad to it. No one can dissuade her from her love and loyalty of her friends. I say that to you because she has done nothing but strive and fight for the rights of women and the rights of all people in the state of South Carolina without ever having once lost a friend. And that's a very hard thing to be able to say at your age, but I am telling you, it is part of what has made her so magical for all of us, that she leaves no one behind. As a founding member of the South Carolina Women's Law Association, we have a pin, which I wasn't bright enough to wear today, but it is a ladder that halfway up has a Carolina Wren sitting on one of the rungs of the ladder. And it comes from something that Chief Justice Toll always says, that you must leave the ladder down for those that will come behind you. So it is, in fact, the emblem of that very fine association because of her. I have only been a lawyer about 3 years, where she did not serve on the South Carolina Supreme Court. When she leaves office in December 31st, it is a real end of an era. One of my law clerks yesterday, who is 26 years old, said she has been on the Supreme Court the entire time I've been alive. And that has nothing to do with age, but you can imagine the scope and the changes that occurred in the laws of South Carolina when this one brave woman has served all this time. Someone asked me, you're the third woman on the Court of Appeals, you're the first woman to be president of the Student Bar Association. I will tell you, I did not have the struggles that this fine woman did and her friends and colleagues. Those ways were pretty much paved for me at that time. But as I sit today with a female governor, a president of the South Carolina Bar, my good friend Ann Ellison, Molly Craig, whose accomplishments you have heard, Justice Kay Hearn, who was the chief of my court for 14 years, there are so many roles out there for women. Here's the important part as I introduce Chief Justice Toll. She has never quit being a wonderful wife, mother, grandmother, and friend. She has not sacrificed, nor has Ann, nor has Molly, the needs of their family and their friends. And in a wonderful thing that you need to know, the Chief Justice has a hoard of blue ribbons for her cheese biscuits at the South Carolina State Fair. Now that is a well-rounded woman that you should strive to be. My very dear friend, Chief Justice Jean Hafer Toll.
Thank you very much, and what a grand honor it is for me today to be the giver of the James Otis Lecture at this celebration of Constitution Day. For this year's Otis Lecture, Obota has chosen, out of all the constitutional issues that have activated the U.S. Supreme Court and litigation across the country, they have chosen women in the Constitution as the theme of this year's presentation. And I'm going to take a slice of that, women and their progress in the legal profession, and use it to exemplify what has happened over the course of our country's history about the position of women in our society and in the world of work. In the last 40 years, the number of women lawyers has increased substantially, so much so that women are finally in the position of being important players in the legal profession. America's historical background, however, fills many more than 200 years rather than just four decades, and it was not always so that women were in the position in the profession that they are today. The year is 1783. Elizabeth Freeman, a slave, appeared before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, demanding her freedom. She claimed that under Massachusetts State Bill of Rights, as a native-born American, she was free and equal. The court of Massachusetts was so impressed with her argument that it granted her the relief she requested, her freedom. 1795, Lucy Terry Prince addressed the United States Supreme Court. She's believed to be the first woman to do so. Prince, an African-American woman, not a lawyer, defended a land claim before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's not known exactly when the first woman began to practice law in the United States, but many legal scholars believe that Margaret Brent was the first woman lawyer in America. She arrived in the colonies in 1638 and was soon appointed as counsel to the then governor of Maryland, the colonial governor of Maryland. The colonists were so impressed with her legal capabilities that they addressed her very respectfully as Gentleman Margaret Brent. She was extremely competent as a lawyer. She handled over 124 major cases within the 8-year period that she practiced in Maryland, but she was never allowed a voice in the political arena because of her gender. Yet despite Brent's early start, women didn't officially practice law in the United States until 1869. Belle A. Mansfield convinced Iowa Judge Francis Springer to interpret the masculine words of the admission statute that described who could be admitted to practice law in Iowa as universal words, as the term man is now interpreted in the Constitution and in the laws of the states. And Iowa became the first state to admit a woman to the practice of law. The first woman law student in the United States was Lemma Barkalow. She was a Brooklyn woman who in 1868 traveled to St. Louis to get an education because no Eastern law school would admit her. She was one of those women that Dean George Templeton was probably referring to when he mentioned in his diary, application from three infatuated young women to Columbia Law School. No woman shall degrade herself by practicing law in New York, especially if I can save her. That was the prevailing attitude about women in the profession. 1869, Myra Bradwell, another very well-known historical figure in women's history in this country, was refused admission to the Illinois bar because she was a married woman and her contracts were not binding. That was an interesting factor about the law in those times. If a woman was married, the woman and man were regarded as one in the law's eyes, and that one was the husband. And therefore, women could not on their own engage in contracts that would be enforceable. And of course, the contract is the essence of the lawyer-client relationship, an agreement, a contract, for the lawyer to represent the client. And since women didn't have the ability, if they were married, to enforce such a contract, Illinois said women cannot be lawyers. The court also proclaimed in Illinois, God designed the sexes to occupy different spheres of action. It belongs to men to make and apply and execute the laws. The United States Supreme Court in 1869 agreed with the Illinois court. Justice Bradley, concurring in the court's opinion, cited the natural differences between men and women as the reason Myra Bradwell could not be admitted. So not only their contracts are not enforceable, but Justice Bradley went further and said that the physical differences between men and women prohibited women from achieving equal status under the United States Constitution. Justice Bradley wrote this: a man is or should be woman's protector and defender. The nature and proper timidity and delicacy which belongs to the female sex evidently unfits it for many occupations of civil life. 1870, the next year, Ada Kepley became the first woman in the United States to graduate from law school and the first woman in the U.S. to practice in a court of law. And then in 1872, the brave woman that Molly Hood Craig picked as one of the three women to illustrate early situations involving women in the profession. Charlotte E. Ray. But she became the first black woman lawyer in the United States and the first woman lawyer in the District of Columbia. Now, here's what the trustees at Howard University Law School said about Charlotte Ray. Examinations for your final degree in law school back at that time were done by the trustees examining the candidate for the degree. Boy, can you imagine that now, that you'd have to have a sea of trustees of the whole university questioning you about the law, and that's how you got your law degree? I think even as terrifying as law school examinations always were for me, that wouldn't strike as much fear in my heart as having an array of legal experts examining me personally about what I knew. Well, that's what Charlotte Ray had to go through. And here's what the trustees said. This colored woman who reads us a thesis on corporations, not copied from books, but from her brain, a clear, incisive analysis of one of the most delicate legal questions. This brilliant woman, who was a Phi Beta Kappa,